Writers, I know you love Serena Bowen, but have you read Serena Bowen? If you haven't, you should. First off, because her books are killer fun, and secondly, because everyone is a masterclass in pacing, characterization, and plot. And if you think plotting romance is easy because, quote, we know what's going to happen, unquote, then call me again after you've tried it. Her latest is The New Guy, but if you're new to her world, I strongly recommend Brooklyn Air. Bet you can't stop with just one. Find out more at serenabowen.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone and try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three. Okay.
Hey, this is Jess Leahy, and welcome to the Hashtag Am Writing Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about all the things, writing all the things, short things, long things, poetry, short stories, nonfiction, novels, graphic novels, poetry, all the stuff. Essentially, this is the podcast about getting the work done. And I am with Serena Bowen this week, and we are talking about breaking news in the publishing industry, a topic that we're really excited to talk about. And Serena, why don't you introduce yourself, and we will get going.
Hey, I'm Serena Bowen. I'm the author of so many novels, and I'm also a sitting council member on the Authors Guild Council. So in my role at the Authors Guild, I am more up to speed on things that are affecting the authorship business than a lot of other people. And this week, it just felt like a good time to talk about this because there's just a lot going on in the world of what it means to be an author. And I wanted to talk about it. It's really consumed my last 24 hours. It has to do with AI and the theft of author work and the ongoing lawsuits therein. So,
yeah, is it? I mentioned to you that I know the algorithm tends to, filter for what I want to see on social. But after you alerted me to this article that we're going to talk about, all of a sudden my social accounts, especially like Threads for me, and mainly that's because I follow a lot of authors, was only this.
Yeah,
it was
right.
Like this and the Severance finale. That was everything in my entire feed.
Yeah. So let's talk about why. There are multiple ongoing lawsuits whereby authors and the Authors Guild and other organizations who represent writers are suing all the big AI, generative AI machines. And the reason that they're suing is that we believe, and in many cases it's already documented, that the large language models, which are driving ChatGPT and Meta's product and the Google product and Microsoft, they basically stole a lot of books from piracy sites to train their models. In other words, every scrap of artificial intelligence isn't artificial, it's just stolen. And that is somebody's tweet that I read today. So the reason is that copyright is very specific, given that it isn't a very new concept, that an author who writes a book gets to say what happens to that book, where and when it is published, and how it is distributed. Now, there are some exceptions to copyright rule that are pretty interesting if you're into that kind of thing. And there is something called fair use where, for example, if somebody writes a 90,000 word book, you could excerpt a little bit of it if you're writing a response to it. Or if you are making a parody of it, there's just all these ways that you can use a little bit of somebody's work without committing infringement of their copyright. But wholesale stealing their work and feeding it into an engine for generative AI is not, in the opinion of all the lawyers who work at the Authors Guild, a fair use doctrine defense. So that's where all these lawsuits are coming from. And they were all the big ones that everybody's looking at were filed more than a year ago. But in March, a reporter at The Atlantic wrote an article with a wonderful headline that I will find for you. But the reporter's name
I'll look it up while you explain the context.
The unbelievable scale of AI's pirated book problem. There we go. The unbelievable scale. I mean, I'm having trouble believing it. And the author who wrote this article
sounds hyperbolic, but as we come to find out, it is not hyperbole.
The author of the article is Alex Reisner, and he does a really fun job of showing what has come out in the discovery documentation of this lawsuit against Meta.
Which is a really important part of the story, because so many people finding out about the information in his article was like, there should be a lawsuit. And Serena has spent a lot of time on social media saying that's the reason we know about this information, is that this was part of discovery.
Right. And then what also occurred to me as I was reading the rage on Threads is that a lot of people don't understand how a class action lawsuit works. So some of those people were saying there should be a lawsuit because they didn't understand that they were automatically included in this lawsuit that's already happening. So I am not a lawyer, but a class action lawsuit is a special kind of lawsuit where you have some named plaintiffs, like big author names, who have volunteered to be the face of the lawsuit. And you establish your lawsuit, and then you ask the judge to certify it as a class action, meaning that instead of just benefiting the people named in the suit, it will benefit everyone who meets the test of the suit. Like every author who copyrighted a book between this year and this year, or, you know, the class could be defined in a few different ways. We could argue about the best way to define it. But so if that lawsuit comes to a meaningful ending, everybody who fits in that class will benefit from it, and not just the named plaintiffs.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning. What happened?
It seems that Meta scraped a huge pirate database called Library Genesis.
Well, hold on. There's even more to the story. According to the article, before that happened, they looked at getting these books legally. They looked at licensing them. They looked at purchasing them. And it was made clear in this article. I want to refer back to this article. I have not seen the lawsuit. In this article, he reported that essentially they said, that's too expensive. Like, they actually looked at doing it the right way and said, no, can't do it that way. That's too expensive, which is a very, very important consideration when it comes to a lawsuit around this, because essentially what they said was, we could do this legally, but it's going to cost a lot of money.
It's a great article. There's a lot of fun little smoking gun things in there. Like, for example, there's a smoking gun bit where it shows that Mr. Zuckerberg approved this theft. There's a smoking gun bit where somebody's like, I never thought I would have BitTorrent streaming a pirate site onto my corporate laptop. Yes.
Well, there's also, and before we get too deep in, I also want to point out that there is precedent for people doing it correctly. So another big buzz, we decided not to do a podcast around this, but there, HarperCollins and some other publishers are likely doing the same thing, did make an agreement with a company that wanted to use high-quality texts in order to train AI. They wanted books that had been published and had been fact-checked and had been copy-edited and all that sort of stuff. And they offered Harper authors, mostly nonfiction, a certain amount of money for access for training AI, and authors took an amount of money. So it's not like we don't know what that would cost. We have an amount of money that Harper negotiated with this company that wanted to use their books in order to train AI. So,
right. So that's an important point, though, for this whole thing, is that in order to win a lawsuit like this, and of course, this is something the Authors Guild taught me, you have a couple things have to happen. One thing that has to happen is you have to prove that it's against the law, meaning that they have to win the argument that this isn't fair use of those books. But the other thing that has to happen is you have to prove harm. The lawyers in the case will have to prove that the authors whose books were stolen were harmed by it. And when that HarperCollins announcement came, where some authors were offered to split a $5,000 payment for those books, some authors on social media were really upset that, like, an organization like the Authors Guild would be excited about this. But it was so exciting. And I just want to make sure everybody understands why it's such a positive development. Like, if there is a functioning marketplace in the world for licensing AI titles to train a database, that proves harm. Like, if your book is stolen by one company for their AI training, but you could license it for $5,000 to another one, it's clear that that by not paying you, you're losing out on, here's a price, now we have it, it's $5,000. So if
that was one of the reasons, one of the reasons I was most excited about it, is that they're, for the first time, they are saying there is value in this and we should be paying authors for this. Whether you agree with the terms, whether you agree with the split, the idea is we need to be paying authors for their works if we're going to use them to train AI. And that was a huge move in the right direction.
Absolutely. It's so important.
The other thing, and there was also, the timing of this is so interesting because the Harper payout, the Harper AI training payout just happened not that long ago. And then it was understood that probably other publishers, especially the big ones, were going to be falling in line and doing similar things with their authors. Oh, Serena has it
No,
back.
That was actually exactly what I was going to say. It really... Okay. It made me so happy that HarperCollins became the first grown-up in the room for the publisher to say, you know what? All these contracts we have with our authors do not automatically give us, HarperCollins, the right to do this automatically. So, and they didn't. Right. They were like, nope. You know, we could try to, like, get away with it under this clause over here, but we're not going to, because this is really important. And we're going to recognize the right that we have not contracted this bit with our authors yet. And it was just, it was so gratifying, because it means, it makes it so hard for another big publisher to come along and behave badly.
Right. And also moving forward, it would have to be a part of contracts going forward in the future, whether or not, you know, they're in the right marketplace or they have the right kind of text or whatever. It has to be a consideration from here on out.
Right. So anyway, that what happened this week in some ways is actually nothing, because the thing that happened is that a sharp Atlantic reporter brought us this information that was actually just public information in a court disclosure. Like, we could have gone and, I guess, found this same discovery info. But he...
It was news to a lot of
people. It was news
though.
To a lot of people. And that was actually a little bit shocking to me. It's one that people didn't really know how awful this pirate site was before now. Then the thing is, I do have a couple critiques of the Atlantic.
Can I add one thing before you go into that, which is that people, one of the things that the Atlantic article did was link to the place where you can go and search to see if your stuff is there. And some people on Threads were reporting back like, oh my gosh, they have 108
that was
of
me.
My things because, yeah, it was you.
I was
and there were actually other... There were other people out there that had even more because there were short stories or there were whatever and translations. So, for example, I had three because they used both of my English versions and my Italian version.
Right.
But you had 108.
And there were a lot of translations in there. And they're also like box sets. So there's some duplication. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there is a problem with this, though, which is...
Okay. Hit us.
Okay. So it's not actually clear from the court disclosures that that Meta took all of that database. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say that. So it's actually possible that their model was not trained on 108 right. Serena Bowen publications. And I feel like The Atlantic was a little squishy about that. And also, they paywalled the article, which could explain so much of what was happening, but they didn't paywall this database lookup thing. So they only gave people who aren't subscribers the scary, awful bit without like showing them where what it all
context.
Yeah, and I feel like that was kind of clumsy. You know, that was just mean.
Well, it's also a little funny and ironic in the context of a conversation about who gets access to what, that people who really need. And it's, again, The Atlantic needs to make money so they can provide, pay for Alex Reisner to get paid for this article. Yes. But at the same time, that context is really important for understanding what it is you're looking at.
Yeah. So
it's like getting your medical, it's like getting labs back from your doctor with no context whatsoever.
Yeah. So I am a subscriber paid to Apple News. And I was able to read this article on Apple News by opening that app and typing in, you know, some keywords about the suit, and it came right up for me. So that was helpful. But Wired Magazine did something really interesting this week, which is that they decided that public information driven journalism would not be paywalled anymore.
That's so interesting.
It was. And
I love it.
I really was so impressed. I already really like, and it's no secret how much I like Wired, but this is,
I have been a fan of Wired for ages. I love it.
Yeah. This is what it says. Wired is dropping paywalls for Freedom of Information Act based reporting, and others should follow.
Yeah.
So, you know, that seems like a positive development. I'm not exactly sure that the substance of this article would have fallen under that, but anyway.
Now, Serena, did you see that in response to this brouhaha on social media, that the Authors Guild posted a post about what authors can do in the wake of finding out this new information? Did you see that?
I did. And I was really impressed with the speed at which they did this. And
I was too.
Yeah. And we're so putting that in our show notes.
Absolutely.
I also wrote up something on my private, not private, but personal Substack, which is about piracy, because I am very much a wonk about how piracy works and how the law around piracy functions for somebody who doesn't know that much about the law. But
because you have to be.
Yes, because there's a lot
you
of.
You get pirated constantly.
Yes, but there are a lot of people who get pirated constantly who don't pay that much attention. And I for example, I saw somebody today and I really felt for this person and I understood what she's going through, because this author on Threads, Julia Sykes, said, "I've never bothered to fight piracy because it felt inevitable. But knowing that my pirated books were used to train AI without my consent feels like part of my soul was stolen." Mm-hmm. And that is really important, because the inevitability that she feels about piracy is not her problem alone. There are many authors who don't try to fight piracy. And I've always had trouble understanding this position, because if you really learn about piracy and how it works, it's a problem that's solvable.
Mm-hmm.
If enough people understood the mechanics, like, we could actually fix it. We don't have to live in a world where ebooks can easily be stolen and posted to others. It's not that complicated. If you think about how YouTube doesn't let you use a Taylor Swift song to put in your aerobics video that you post, you know, it can be done. Like, ebooks are so much easier to sort of spot on the internet. You know, text files are small. Like, this isn't a problem we actually have to live with. It's just one that nobody has found the will to fix. That's not even that hard. So I wrote something about that today, and I will link to that as well.
And I think the other thing is, it's it seems like this big scary thing that's too complicated for you to understand. And where do you even go to look to see if you are being pirated, and what could you possibly do about it? But it wouldn't be that complicated for the companies that have the resources to assign people to this task, like if HarperCollins or, you know, it's a big problem. And you have said in the past that you could release a book in the morning, first thing in the morning, and that it would be pirated by lunchtime.
That's true every single time. And in this case, it's not actually the HarperCollinses of the world that need to change what they are doing technically around this. Like, they actually almost all employ tech firms to help them sniff out and take down pirated content. But what they shouldn't stand for anymore is the biggest bookstore in the world making it easy. Do you know that it's almost impossible to pirate a copy of a book that you buy on Google Play?
I did not know
that. It's so locked into their app that, like, getting that file down so you can post it elsewhere is almost impossible. But guess who makes it super, super easy?
The Zahn?
Yeah, the Zahn. And they don't have to. And the dumb thing is that their needs and desires along the lines of piracy are in very good alignment with authors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we both lose money when stuff is pirated. The fact right. that they don't work harder to stop it is just ridiculous. How much goodwill could Amazon buy with authors and publishers by making ebook piracy really stinking hard? Like, so much goodwill. Like, why not do that?
So in the face of this news that came out this week, that's, you know, we say it's surprising that people didn't already know this, but they clearly didn't. And cool, whatever. They're now finding out and people are feeling helpless. And so where do you think this puts us? Like, do we have any idea? We have no idea really how much longer this lawsuit is going to take. And we have no idea what the outcome of this lawsuit is going to be. But what I find interesting is if they're looking for any kind of precedent's not the right word because that's a legal word, but if they're looking for precedent for what this, the value of these files are, they need look no further than, oh, I don't know, what HarperCollins just got and paid out, or, you know, what they made it for licensing those works to another AI company. So it's not as if we're in uncharted territory here. So, I mean, a lot of things could come out of this. I mean, there's the possibility, I guess, that authors could be compensated. Who knows? I have no idea. We're going to have to wait to find out.
Yeah. Well, I heard somebody speculate that there could be a summary judgment in the Meta case on the fair use defense as soon as May.
Okay.
So if that's true, and if the judge rules that fair use does not apply here, that could be a huge game changer. That could make a difference to other outstanding lawsuits. And it could make an instant change to the behavior of these companies.
I have one final question for you, because I happen to know some things about this. If we were able to get Z Library down, why can't we get this other one down?
I actually... It's really hard. This one's based in Russia, and they have no interest in helping us. And when the people who ran Z Library were arrested, they were...
Where was that based?
Well, I don't know where the servers were. I actually can't remember, because I didn't know anything about it until I read about it on the internet. But the people were arrested in Argentina. So,
oh, that's right. So for background, Z Library was a big library where a lot of people got pirated books, and it got taken down. What, it's been like a year or two ago now?
A couple.
Yeah. So it was along the same lines as what we're talking about now, that scraped all that has all of these books sitting there that Meta used to train their AI.
Yeah. So I'm not sure about
this. So take it down, Russia. Take it down.
But you know what, though? Here's the stupid thing. Just because there's this site in Russia that exists does not mean it needs to be findable on Google.
Like, that's true. Like, that's a very good point.
We have so little support. You know, if does Google value their own IP? Because they sure don't value mine. Like, if a site has no existence on Earth other than to pirate people's works, you know, there's no reason an American should be able to easily find it. Like, nobody's owed a search result.
Yeah.
Just because the site is popular doesn't mean it needs to pop up. You know, these things are not unsolvable. The will to solve them is just really low.
Yep. Well, I'm glad we did this because it has been the talk of the publishing town and authorly town this week. So I'm glad we did a little bit of a summation of the situation.
Yeah. And you know what? Until the next thing, until the next big discussion point, we're all going to keep our butts in the chair and our heads in the game.
And if there is a summary judgment in May, maybe we'll come back and talk about it.
All right.
We'll be keeping a very close eye on this lawsuit. But thank you for joining us for this episode of the Hashtag MWriting podcast. And as Serena already said, this is important because, like, we get distracted by a lot of stuff.
Yes.
By social media, by our stuff being pirated, by the news cycle. But seriously, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Thank you.